Good afternoon. My name is Holly, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I'd like to welcome everyone to the CDR Forum Walkthrough. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you'd like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you'd like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. I'd now like to turn today's conference over to Jane Wallace. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Holly. I'm Jane Wallace, an IT specialist in the Information Management Division. I'm the project manager for the development of the CDR application. I want to thank you guys for participating and being so patient here in this webinar, any previous webinars you've been to, calls to the help desk, and emails that we received. You've helped mold the application and this presentation. We recognize that you are key users of the system and value your input. We recognize that many of you are still early in the CDR process, and we are taking the opportunity to show you the basics of the eCDR web. We're going to walk over some of the highlights of the web application. I'm sorry, in terms of agenda today, we're going to go over some of the highlights of the eCDR web, walk through registration and the application itself, and provide you with a list of resources. Then we will open up the lines for any questions that you may have. The eCDR web is a web-based application. Anywhere you can access the internet, you'll be able to access your form. We took into consideration those of you that are on managed systems and work towards a solution that is portable and accessible while providing you the security necessary for the CVI nature of the submission site. We've leveraged the Central Data Exchange, or CDX, which serves as a point of entry for environmental data submissions to the agency. It allows the filling of an electronic form, which can be submitted instantaneously instead of mailing paper forms, and you can receive agency confirmation when the submission is received. The application has been designed with your confidential business information needs by providing a secure environment that meets federal standards. It uses transportation layer security with a 256-bit digital encryption and your CDX credentials. Those are your username and password combination, as well as a 25-1 series of questions. The data is encrypted at rest, and all the data remains encrypted at rest until it's behind several EPA firewalls and within EPA's CBI LAN. The roles and responsibilities can be seen as two submission types, each having two roles. The submission types are primary and secondary, where the primary is the one submitting parts 1 through 3 of the form, the company and site information, technical contact information, chemical identification, manufacturing information, that is where you identify production volume, including import, industrial processing and use, as well as commercial and consumer use information. Joint submission information, if applicable, is also identified in this section of the form. The secondary fills out part 4 of the form, which is company information and trade product information. The bottom line for the two roles is that there is an authorized official, the one that creates, signs, and submits the form, and there is an option for a support. That is one that provides information on the form that is authorized, that the authorized official has provided support access to. Now let me turn over the presentation to Sue Dose, who is the functional lead at CGI.
Thanks, Jane. Once again, my name is Sue, and today I'm going to be walking you through a demo of the CDX registration. After I do the demo of CDX registration, I'm going to shoot it over to Nikki Space, who is our business analyst, and she's going to walk you through a demo of the eCDR web tool. So we'll go over registering CDX as a primary authorized official. Hopefully, most of you are familiar with this screen. This is the CDX home screen. You can see in the center of the screen you have links that will help you with frequently asked questions or terms and conditions. To register or log into CDX, over to the top right, you'll see the buttons over there. If you do have an existing registration account, you'll want to click on the log into CDX. For users that have an existing registration with eTosca or TrimeWeb, you can reuse your registration, and we'll go over that a little bit later, but you can reuse your registration to fill out and enter the CSPP data flow to enter or to submit an eCDR web form you. So to register for CDX, you click on Register with CDX. That will take you to the Terms and Conditions screen. The screen that you're currently looking at is a shortened version of the screen just for the purpose of this presentation. It's a little bit longer. So you're going to want to read through those terms and conditions and click I accept. After that, you'll be taken to the User Information screen. Anything that has a red asterisk is a required field. You are required to fill out that information. This is similar to any other online registration that you're filling out. You'll enter in your first, last name, your username, password, re-enter a password, and towards the bottom of it, you'll have a secret question and secret answer. Those are for you to use in the event that you do forget your CDX password. So after you fill out that information, you click Next. Here you'll enter in your organization information. Again, every field that has a red asterisk is required. I would like to point out here that some of you have questions regarding the multiple AO functionality found within CDR Web. This is where you'll want to make sure that your organization name that you type in here is exactly the same as the person who you want to share those CDR forms with. You'll fill all the rest of the information and click Next. Then you'll be taken to the Add Programs screen. This is where you actually select the data flow that you're going to be reporting under. CDR Web and all CFPP applications are located under the Submissions for Chemical Safety and Pesticide Programs data flow. You'll select that radio button and click Next. After that, you're taken to the Add Program ID screen. This is where you'll identify the role that you are going to log into the application as. So as Jane mentioned earlier, you have four different types of roles. You have your primary authorized official, your primary support, your secondary authorized official, and your secondary support. Your primary authorized official and primary support are used to complete sections 1 through 3 of the Form U, and then your secondary authorized official and secondary support is used to complete your section 4 of the Form U. So here we're going to move forward with registering as a primary authorized official. After you select that from the drop-down menu, you will want to add your EPA facilities. To do that, you click Search EPA Facilities. That will take you to the Find Existing Facility screen. You can, if you have an EPA registry ID, you can enter it here and just click Get Facility Details or enter any of the other information into these fields and then click Get Facility Details. If there's search results returned, you'll see this screen. This does allow you to select multiple facilities. You can select it by checking the checkbox over on the left-hand corner or left-hand side of the screen and then just click Select. We also do give you the option to create a new facility if your facility that you're searching for or site that you're searching for is not located in this list. Something to note that when you do create a new facility, you will see that your EPA registry ID is in pending status. This does not mean that that facility is in pending status and you have to wait for that facility to become active before you're able to submit. That's just what the system will say. So as soon as you create that new facility, you can go log into CDR Web as soon as your account is active, and that form will be there for you in CDR Web. So we'll select a facility, click on Select, and then we'll be taken to the Add Program ID screen again. This just basically wants you to confirm that you've added the primary authorized official role and your facility information. So go ahead and click Finished. The next step is to do your identity proofing. For electronic identity proofing, we use LexisNexis. If you don't want to proceed to LexisNexis, you're going to click the Sign Paper Form. For the purpose of this presentation, we'll proceed to LexisNexis. The next screen is just allowing you to verify that the identification process will be conducted by LexisNexis on behalf of the EPA. This information is what you'll want to complete that will help you pass the LexisNexis verification. You'll see that the top fields that hopefully you can see that they're grayed out, those come from your organization information that you previously entered in the beginning of your registration. If you see that any of those fields are incorrect, you will have to cancel out of this process and go and update that organization information. The other fields that are required is your home address, your home city, home state, your last four of your social security number, and your date of birth, and also your home zip. Those are required fields. Anything that is not noted with an asterisk is not required. However, if you do put it in, you could increase your chances of of passing the verification. The verification does verify you to the company as well as that the company exists. So if you have your FEIN, that would help. I know that you can find your FEIN on your W-2s in case you guys don't know what that is. So click Submit. This is you just completing, the, you know, thank you for completing LexisNexis verification. Just click OK. You'll be taken back to the LexisNexis results. Here you still have the option of opting out of LexisNexis. If you want to opt out of LexisNexis, you'll just continue to sign the paper form. If you want to complete LexisNexis, you click Complete LexisNexis Validation. And if you've passed the LexisNexis validation, you'll be taken to the CDX ESA screen. Here, you are still able to sign a paper form ESA or continue to sign electronically. We definitely recommend that if you pass LexisNexis identity proofing that you electronically sign your ESA. It will allow you to become active immediately after you finish your registration as opposed to mailing in, printing out your form and mailing it in, waiting for it to be processed. So we'll go ahead and sign electronically. Here you're going to set up your eSig PIN entry. This is also known as your 25-1, if you hear people say that. We give you a list of 20 questions. You are to choose 5 and then answer all of them. And then upon submission and also when you sign your ESA, we will ask you one of those 5 questions that you previously selected, and you'll have to answer that question. So after you select the answer, select the questions that you want to complete and put your answers in, you just click Save Answers. This is just a confirmation. Thank you. You've answered your eSig questions. So you click Continue. Here, you'll want to review your CDX ESA. You can see that the right side of it is scrollable, so there is a lot of text in there. To continue, you just click Sign Electronically. And this is where you'll enter in your CDX password. You'll answer one of your security questions. This security or secret question is not the secret question that you first put in when you identified your user information. This is the 25-1 question, your randomly chosen question that you're going to answer here. And then you click sign. And that's it. Your online registration is complete. So after that, you can go into CDR and start updating your form and start submitting your form. So after that, you just click finished. What I'm going to do now is hand it over to Nikki Spaeth, who is our business analyst lead for the eCDR web tool, and she's going to walk you through the primary authorized official and the secondary authorized official screens of eCDR web.
Thank you, Sue. I'm Nikki Spaeth. I'm the business analyst with CDR. I'm going to, after you have completed the registration process, you will come to this screen, the My CDX screen. You will select your user role here. We're going to select primary authorized official, and that will take you to the chemical information submission system screen. From this screen, you will select chemical data reporting, CDR, from the drop-down and click OK. This will take you to the home screen. The home screen is the first screen in the application. Prior to starting a form in the application, we recommend that you go to the resources screen and download a copy of the user guide because it gives you step-by-step instructions on how to complete the form. Now, if you would like to assign support to complete the data entry for a form, you would do that through user management. So you would click either this user management tab or this link here. That will take you to the user management screen. You will select a site from this drop-down. Any supports that have assigned, have identified you as an AO during CDX registration will appear in this unassigned box. You will select them, click Add, and that will move them over to the assigned box. And then you will click Save. You must hit Save after each assignment. So we'll come back to the home screen. In order to access the 2012 form you form screen, you will select either the forms tab or the forms link. From here, you'll see all the list of sites that you have identified during CDX registration. We are going to select this not started form. So you would just click on the link. That would take you to the Create Passphrase screen. Here you're going to create a passphrase, which is used to encrypt the data that is entered into your form. Once you have created a passphrase, you will click the Next button. This will take you to the Section 1A Parent Company Information screen. This information is pulled in from CDX registration based on the organization that you registered under. The DMB number and county parish fields are editable. Now, if your parent company differs from the organization that you registered under in CDX, you are now able to click this checkbox here. That will make all of these fields editable so that you can change this information. Once you have done that, you can click Next. This will take you to the Section 1B Site Information screen. This is also pulled in from CDX registration, and the DMB number and county parish fields are also editable on this screen. Note that the DMB number is not dash sensitive. Once you've completed those two fields, you can click Next. This will take you to the Section 1C Technical Contact Information screen. On this screen, you can identify a technical contact for the chemical report that you are submitting. All of these fields are blank and editable upon entering the screen. Once you fill out all of these fields, you will click Next. This is where you would identify the chemical that you're reporting on. You will click Search. This will generate the Substance Registry Services search pop-up. You can search for a chemical using CASRN, CA index name, accession number, or generic name. Once you enter it in, you would click Search. We are searching by CASRN. And you'll get a list of results. Pick the appropriate result by clicking or selecting the radio button here and click OK. This will fill in the chemical information here. You also have the option of entering a chemical report alias here, which will show up on in your navigation tree so you can identify the different chemical reports. Once you've done this, you'll select Next. And you'll be taken to the Section 2B Manufacturing Information screen. On this screen, you'll enter all of your manufacturing information, such as number of workers, max concentration, whether the chemical is recycled, manufactured, reprocessed, etc. You can identify whether it is a manufactured chemical or if it's imported. So enter in your production volume, volume used on site, volume exported, and then you can identify a physical form here and put in the percentage of production volume that's in that physical form. You're also required to enter your production volume for the calendar year of 2010. Clicking Next will take you to the next screen. However, if you have put in values that do not make sense, for instance, in this case, the volume used on site exceeded the sum of the domestically manufactured and imported values minus the volume exported, you will receive validation errors. Also, for the production volume, percent production volume, it has to be a number less than 100. So you would need to correct these values before proceeding. When you click Next after correcting your the values that generated the validation errors, you'll be taken to Section 3A of the form, which allows you to provide industrial processing and use information. You will have to provide type of process or use, industrial sector codes, an industrial function category, percent production volume, number of sites, and number of workers by either selecting from the dropdown or entering in this text field the percent production volume. If you're unsure of any of the codes or the definition of each, you can always go up to this help icon. It's a little question mark. Once you click on that, it'll generate this help text pop-up, and it has a description of each code and instruction on how to fill out different areas of the form. You can also claim one of these fields as CBI. Note that if you select NKRA, not known or reasonably ascertainable for a particular field, you cannot claim that as CBI. But once you select a certain field as CBI, it'll generate this pop-up letting you know that you must complete CBI substantiation questions. Once you click OK, it'll take you to the CBI substantiation questions screen and provide you a list of questions for which you must provide answers. So you'll provide your answers, you'll click Next, and it'll take you to the CBI substantiation summary screen, where it just shows you a summary of the questions and the answers you provided. After you've completed the substantiation summary, you would just go to the navigation tree here on the side and go back to where you left off. So we finished the industrial processing and use. We would just click consumer and commercial use to go back to complete that section of the form. Once you do that, you're taken to the Section 3B consumer and commercial use screen, very similar to the industrial processing and use screen. You have to provide a product category, consumer and or commercial use. You have to identify whether the product is used in products intended for children, provide a percent production volume, maximum concentration, and the number of chemical workers. Once you've completed this information, you click Next. You can save the form at any point by clicking Save, or the previous and next buttons also save. At any point, if you would like to add an additional chemical, you can click this Add Chemical button, and it'll generate another chemical report with all of these sections that I just showed you in the navigation tree. You can click Upload XML if you would like to go to the Upload XML screen to upload an XML to fill in all of the data entry for the form. To add a joint submission report, you would click this Add Joint Submission button in the lower left corner. This will generate a joint submission report in your navigation tree over here. And the first screen is chemical identification. This is where you would provide information for your joint submission for the trade product name, for which you may not know the actual chemical substance name. Down here, it generates a unique identifier for the joint submission. If you click this link here, it'll generate a template to email the joint submitter or the secondary submitter, notifying them of the unique identifier, which they will need in order to complete Section 5 of the form. Once you've completed this information, you'll click Next. All of the remaining screens for the joint submission form are identical to the chemical report. So we'll just move on to back where we were, consumer and commercial use. From any screen in the application, you can click this Validate icon at the lower in the lower action bar. This will generate a CDR Form U validation pop-up screen. It will show you any errors that you have in your form and also warnings. Warnings do not prevent you from submitting your form. They're just warnings. Errors do prevent you from submitting your form. You can click on these errors. They are links, and they will take you back to the screen that is missing information. So in this case, we would click this, and it would take us back to the consumer and commercial use screen to complete that particular field that was missing. After you've completed the form, you'll click Save. Let me go back. And you will click the Submit icon here in the lower action bar when you're done. This will generate the Submission Process Validation screen. This is validating your entire form to make sure that you have no missing data. Then it will take you to the submission process PDF generation screen. At this point, you can either click View PDF to just view a preview of your form, or just click Continue. Continue takes you to the ProMair certification screen. You'll need to read all of this information here to make sure that you understand that you're certifying the document and all the attachments. And then click the I Certify button. Here you will provide your CDX password. This is the password you use to log into CDX. Once you've done that, you'll click Next. And you will need to provide one of your, you'll be presented with one of your 25-1 questions that you selected during registration, and you'll need to provide the answer here. Once you've done that, you select Next, and then Confirm. This will tell you that your submission was sent to the EPA, and a copy of record link will be downloadable in the copy of record section of the form. And then you'll click Finish. Once you've submitted, it will show up here as Processing. It takes about 10 to 15 minutes for your copy of record to show up, and for this icon indicates that the form was submitted. If at any time you need to amend a form, you would click this lock icon, and it would show as unlocked, and then you would be able to click on the link here and amend your form. So to download your copy of record, you would click on this green download icon. This takes you to the Enter Passphrase screen, where you will enter your passphrase associated with the form. Then you will click Next. Then you will need to enter your CDX password, which is used to log into CDX, and click OK. You'll be presented with a 25-1 question again. You provide the answer and click OK. And you'll be taken to the Download Copy of Record screen. On this screen, you'll click on this green download arrow, and a zip file a window will pop up, and it will contain a zip file. Once you open that zip file, it contains a PDF copy of record and an XML copy of record that contains all of the key items entered into the form. As a secondary authorized official, you have to fill out the Section 4 of the form, which is a separate registration process. You have to log in as secondary authorized official. You will come to the same chemical information submission screen, select the chemical data reporting CDR, and click OK. Click Forms from your form screen. And you will have one secondary form for all of the chemicals that you're reporting on. You'll click on this link, Secondary Form. You must create a passphrase to associate with the form here. Click Next. This information is pulled in from your CDX registration. Note that the county parish field is editable. Click Next. You can provide a technical contact for the chemical here and click Next. Here, the joint submitter will enter the unique identifier that the primary submitter emailed to the joint submitter. Once they've entered that unique identifier, they'll click Populate, and all of the information, the trade name, is brought into the form. Once that's complete, you can click Next. This will take you to the Section 4D Trade Product Identification Info screen. Here you can search for your chemical by clicking this magnifying glass. This will generate the SRS window, which we saw previously, and you can search for your chemical. Once you've found your chemical and populated it here, you need to provide the percent composition for that chemical. You can also provide additional information in this field if you desire. Here you'll click Save, and then you'll click Submit, similar to the process in the primary form. Once you've gone through the submission process, you can download your copy of record through the same process as through the primary form by clicking this download arrow. Last, any resources that you need are available on the EPA website at this link here. Sorry about that. There are CDX registration guides to walk you through how to register for CDX. There are XML schema guides to help you format your XMLs. And then there are user guides for each user role to walk you through step-by-step how to fill in the form. Those are on the EPA website. There's also a resources tab on the form screen where it's the last tab on the form screen. That also provides links to the different places on EPA's website to find this information. If you experience any issues with the application, any policy issues, you want to contact the TSCA hotline. Any technical issues that you may have, you would want to contact the CDX help desk. Now I think we're ready for questions.
Thank you, Nikki and Sue, for your good presentation. Just a couple of points of clarifying points to make. I know this has come up before, and I'm not sure we covered this well enough, but if you have an XML upload, that is not necessary if you're entering all your information through the application itself. The XML is meant for those companies with large systems that have a way to export their data and can be uploaded seamlessly into the application itself. So it's not necessary to be used. And Holly, if you want to go ahead and open up the lines for any questions that we have. If there is a moment of silence, we're probably formulating an answer. Just wanted to give a warning about that. So.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. And you do have a question that has come through from the line of Jeanette Ward. Jeanette, your line is open.
I have a question about the identity proofing. I wanted to confirm that the paper form option was going to continue to be available, because providing home phone number, last four digits, social security number, home address, and date of birth seems a bit excessive.
Right, yes. If you find that providing that information to LexisNexis is not for your liking, feel free to opt out at any point in time of the LexisNexis or even in advance of that to submit the paper form. Be warned that you should provide at least 10 business days for it to be processed that way. Not only do you have regular USPS mail, but all mail gets irradiated when it comes to the EPA, and on top of our mailroom handling, it takes a little bit of time and more than expected in terms of processing.
But
so,
the paper form will continue to be available, right?
Correct. I'm sorry. Yes, the paper form is still available.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Linda Santry.
Hello. My question is about the technical contact. I was trying to put in a technical contact who is located outside the United States, and it wouldn't let me put in an address that didn't have a zip code. Does the technical contact have to be a U.S. resident?
No, the technical contact does not need to be a U.S. resident. The technical contact should be somebody who can answer the questions associated with the manufacturing and other information with the reporting site. So EPA does expect that it is most likely someone closely associated with that site would be the correct person to be the technical contact.
But if all of your activity is import, then the site is just a sales office, and in fact the people who have the technical knowledge are outside the U.S.
So they wouldn't have a zip code. Lynette, could you do us a favor and email ecdrweb at epa.gov with this comment that you just made.
Okay.
And we'll work with you to make sure that that's an option for you.
Because it occurred to me that anybody who's a secondary company, they're probably not going to, like, you know, an international supplier who's doing a joint submission is not likely to have a U.S.-based technical contact as well. Okay, I will send an email.
And your next question comes from the line of Kathleen Roberts.
Hi, good afternoon. I just would like to maybe get a summary of the different passwords and questions that people should be prepared to have to put forward when they're registering. So if I recall correctly, there's a password affiliated with the CDX registration and one secret question associated with that. And then there's under the CDR, there's a passphrase, and is that unique for each facility or chemical, and the 25-1 questions?
Yeah, you have that right. So, okay, sorry about that. Yes, you have that right. You have your username that goes with a password that goes in when you register. Also, that secret question and answer has to do if you ever forget that specific password. That is with CDX, and also with CDX is a 25-1 series of questions that you will also use when you submit the submission itself. And the passphrase is related to each of the facilities that you submit for.
You can use the same passphrase. So if you have multiple sites within your account, if you have multiple sites that you're reporting for, you can use that same passphrase for multiple forms. So if that helps you out a little bit.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line, at Betsy Duncan.
Yes, I am in the process of building my reports using the old-fashioned manual way, and I noticed that particularly in Section 3, it's very slow-going, very tedious, because every time you want to move from screen to screen, you have at least three waits. One of them, when you click next, you get a please wait. Then a screen comes up where you have to acknowledge. Then you get another please wait. And all of that takes anywhere from, 10, it seems a really long time, but, I'm sure it's like 10 seconds. Is there any way to avoid all of these please waits and clicks to acknowledge and just to move from one screen to another within the same chemical, within the same report?
Is this with the CBI substantiation, or which browser are you using?
What do you mean, which?
Are you trying to claim CBI for those points?
No, not at all.
Which browser are you using?
Which browser?
Yes, is it Internet Explorer, Firefox, Mozilla?
It's Explorer. Well, it's through my company. I'm assuming it's Explorer.
It sounds like you have an issue with the settings. My recommendation to you would be to call the CDX help desk.
Okay.
Explain that we quickly discuss this, and you have a settings issue that you would like some assistance with.
Okay. So you think there's some actual browser settings that could be changed that would speed this process up?
Yes.
Okay. Okay. So it's very tedious right now. Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Betsy.
Your next question comes from the line of Samantha Hauser.
Hi. In the case of when a company acquires another company, so the new parent company already has a CDX account, and the company that we have acquired had an existing CDX account as well. We would like to report the newly acquired company under one CDX account, and I was wondering if you guys could explain the steps of how we could do that.
So whichever company is the parent organization, so for example, you have Company 1 and Company 2, and company one is going to be the company that has purchased company two, the people that have registered under company one would add a facility related to the information for company two, as Sue described in the CDX registration process. So if you go into the My CDX page, I think there's a third item that says edit account information. Third from the left, where you go in and you add a facility in that area. So that is how you would have an additional facility for that company that you purchased.
Okay, and does it matter if there are two different EPA ID numbers, or would the company number two be given a new, the same EPA ID number as company one?
It doesn't matter what the company ID is, as long as you can find it in FRS.
Okay.
Just use that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Catherine Gleason.
Hi. We have a lot of the petroleum streams, and I'm just wondering, because they're partially exempt from reporting, is the tool going to tell me there's an error if we don't fill in the Part 3?
No, for Part 3 of the form, any exempted chemicals such as those petroleum streams will not provide an error if that part is not filled out.
Okay. Does it know automatically that these exemptions are there, or just?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Tim Gaffney.
Good afternoon. Two questions. Can the primary authorized official and the secondary authorized official be the same person if there's only one person in the company that does these reports? And then secondly, can you just explain again what the joint submittal means?
Well, if the primary authorized official knows all the information for the submission, including secondary, they can just put it all in the same form.
Right. A joint submission is for the situation where the primary company does not know some of the information that, for instance, if a mixture is being imported and the foreign supplying company is holding as confidential some of the identity information for the mixture that's being imported. The company that's importing and is reporting as the primary doesn't know the identity of those chemicals. And they would have that other company, that foreign company, serve as the secondary submitter. And so that foreign company would then would be the secondary authorized official. And so I can't envision a time when the primary and secondary authorized officials would be the same person.
Oh, okay. No, that answered my question. Thank you.
Okay.
Your next question comes from the line of Steve Eisen.
Yes, you already answered my question, so thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Lisa Potts.
Hi. I have already signed up and gotten my authorized officials into the system, and in the meantime, we've gone through a reorganization, and two of my three officials are no longer with the company, and now I need to change my authorized official. I contacted the help desk, and they said that I could do it as long as I knew the no longer with me people's passphrase.
So there are a couple of different things going on. This is Van Tranlam with CGI. There are a couple of different things going on in what you just described. One is we can remove those authorized officials from accessing your form. What we just need to do is you can provide us with their call to help desk. They'll route you through appropriately. But you'll need to make sure that you have their usernames, just their usernames, and we can delete them from the organization. That way, we pretty much revoke their credentials for accessing CSPP, which is the data flow. From that point there, that takes care of the people who went through either voluntary or involuntary attrition. And then from the other point, the other people who need to submit or have access to that form, whoever it is that's replacing them or other people, they just need to register as authorized officials. They need to make sure that they have the passphrase for the forms that were created. But those forms are able to be viewed across authorized officials. So losing one or two authorized officials, so long as people are aware of the passphrase.
Well, why would I be aware of an ex-employee's passphrase?
The passphrase is for the form itself, not the username and password for the registration, but the passphrase for the form that they may have created.
Yeah.
Okay.
When the authorized official creates that form, and I don't know what your business model is, but in most cases an authorized official creates the forms, other people such as technical contacts, agents, and so on and so forth would go into that form and populate information into that form. The creation of the form is not possible without a passphrase, and access to that form is not possible without the passphrase. If you want to think of it as the secret decoder ring, you got to have the secret decoder ring to go into the form. So if they never created the form, then it's kind of a moot point. But if they created the form and other people were accessing it, then those other people would actually have access to that passphrase.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Martin Tremblay.
Quick question. I think I might have solved my own problem while I was listening to the other answers. But during the presentation itself, I could not see the bottom toolbar, and so I'm going to need to review the presentation on my own. And I see that was just a matter of what Zoom I had my presentation on. For example, that right there, what I'm seeing right now, will we have will the presentation be available online so we can take a look at it later?
Yeah, it's actually available right now, just the PDF version of the slide deck. It's under the resources section of the CDR website.
Okay.
So if you go to epa.gov/CDR, on the left-hand navigation, there's a resources guide. And if you look under the webinars, I think it's the last item under the webinars link.
All right.
But Nikki, if you could go back a couple, just to show you what's on the bottom of the form. In general, the bottom shows a validate, which validates the complete form and shows you any errors. The save itself will save the complete form. So, for example, if you have to walk away, you're in the middle of a call or what have you, you can save it in process. Preview, it will generate a PDF version of the form as you have it right now. And submit goes through the whole process that Nikki showed, which is, you know, validating the screen, validating the form itself, generating a PDF for your own purposes, and submitting using your CDX credentials and certifying everything is as you stated on the form.
Hey, Jane?
Yes.
Right, what you're showing now, I can't see the bottom toolbar right now, and okay, I can see it in that view. Yeah.
Okay, so sorry about that. As you can see, the validate is a check, save is a little floppy disk.
Sure.
Preview is the screen, and submit is a, I like to call it a can of worms, but it's the submit.
Okay, that's much better.
Oh,
thanks.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Scott Sperrick.
Hi. When I logged in initially into the CDX site, I managed to get off the way to register electronically, the electronic signature. Now that I've gone back in, it only gives me a paper copy option. Is there a way I can go back to the beginning and do it electronically?
I don't know the specific details about that, but if you could call the CDX help desk, they should be able to walk you through that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Robbie Gonti.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking the call. It's actually a two-part question. The first one is if in an organization you have one authorized official who then delegates people in different businesses as their primary support, do the people in the support role, the primary support, have to wait until the authorized official has received all the necessary, certifications, for his or her part before they can go ahead and sign in?
Yeah, so when you register as a primary support, it's going to ask you for the primary authorized official's user ID, your CDX user ID that you're going to link yourself to. So it actually won't let you, if that primary authorized official has not previously registered for CDX, it's not going to let that primary support register themselves.
Okay.
They have registered themselves, and the primary support goes in, logs in, they're automatically going to be active after they register. Even if the primary authorized official hasn't, you know, updated or added facilities, or if there's information that they have incomplete in their actual CDR application, that doesn't prevent the primary support to access the CDR application, but they won't be able to do anything in the application until they actually have the primary authorized official create a form for them.
Okay, and the second part, if I may, as far as the submission goes, it'll be the people in the primary support role who will then be filling out forms for their various locations. Ultimately, when the forms are completed, who can do the final submission to the EPA? Would that be the people in the support role, or would it have to be the primary authorized official?
No, only the authorized official should be submitting the form itself.
Okay, so once everything is done, then that is the person who will generate all the PDFs and go through that authorization process for the final submissions.
Correct. And you'll notice if you are signed in as a primary support, you won't even see that option to submit a form when you're in that application. Only when you're signed in as a primary authorized official or a secondary authorized official will you even have the option to submit.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Christopher Colford.
Hi, I just wanted to confirm whether an accession number for a confidential substance is allowed. And secondly, if you could elaborate on the responsibilities of the technical contact, what kind of, I just want to get an idea of the person who that, what knowledge should that person have to be assigned that role?
Hi, this is Susan. Your first question about the accession number for confidential substances, those are included in the SRF search mechanism that is embedded in the reporting tool and is the way that you would report for those substances.
Okay.
For the technical contact, basically we're looking for someone who would be able to answer any follow-up questions that we may have about the information that's reported on the reporting form. So generally, we would expect that to most likely to be somebody at the manufacturing site.
Okay, but in the case of an importer?
Then it would be the best person that you have that would be able to answer follow-up questions that we may have.
So it might be, for example, a question raised about some odd use of a chemical that's reported for a different industrial category where everyone else reports it under to clarify some peculiar data on the submission?
Yeah, very possibly. If it looks like there's something strange about the data, then we may call and just ask the technical contact if this data is what it's supposed to be or if there was a keystroke error or something in entering it.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Michael Bain.
Good afternoon. We're new to this whole TSCA deal because we just started a company up. But the question, we are doing the paper ESA, and in one of the slides you mentioned that there's in the Chrome Air part, that there's a 25-1 question that they're going to come up with. We didn't really, there's none of that when you do the paper, but it was, or I don't think it is. Is that something that's going to come up different since we didn't do the paper, or we did do the paper?
Yeah, so when you, if you opt out of your LexisNexis and the electronic ESA, if you sign your paper ESA, you'll mail it into the EPA, and as soon as they activate you, the next time that you log in to CDX, you'll be prompted to complete your 25-1 question and answer.
Oh, okay, okay.
If you're not prompted, that probably means that, A, you probably haven't been activated, but if you go to your actual CDX registration or your account and you see that your account is actually active and you weren't prompted for that 25-1, I would definitely call the CDX help desk.
Okay, okay. That'll take care of it then. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And your next question comes from the line of Paul DeCiccio.
Hi. Actually, a lot of my questions have been already been asked and have been asked answered. You guys have made this incredibly complicated, and I guess what I plan to do is I couldn't get through LexisNexis, so I have to do the paper form. And when I get that back, I do plan on downloading this webinar. But on the CDX Help Desk, CDR Help Desk, are they going to be available to answer just all different kinds of general questions as you're going through this? We only have like one chemical to report, but I just want to make sure that when I do go through it, it does appear that I'm going to be able to run into some problems here. So I guess my general question is CDR Help Desk, are they going to be able to answer all forms of all manner of questions here?
In terms of the application itself, if you have any questions on how to go through the form and the registration and all that, yes, the CDX Help Desk will help you with that. And if you have any issues at all, they'll get escalated to basically the people in the room, to CGI. So, yes, they can help you with that. But if there are any policy questions, you should direct those to the TSCA hotline, and they should be help you with certain questions that you may have in terms of policy.
What do you mean by policy?
Say if you have a question on threshold.
I understand. Right. No need for that. I understand. We already passed the threshold on one chemical, so
okay,
definitely
so.
Not that.
Yeah, so definitely, you can call the CDX Help Desk. They should be able to walk you through everything that you need. Any issues that they cannot address, you should ask to be escalated, and they will put you through to the right people.
Well, that's good then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Linda Rogers.
Well, my question was similar to the last caller. I had some technical questions about isolated versus non-isolated intermediates and some other questions that through reading I think I pretty much have answered myself, but I sent an email on April 24th and got a response on April 25th saying that there had been a lot of questions and they would be answered in the order that they were received, basically. And that was 2 weeks ago. And I guess I didn't realize that the TSCA hotline was for policy issues anyway, so I called the TSCA hotline, and they were not able to help me at all. And I guess I feel like until I get these answers, I can't really move forward on completing the forms. And I just would like to know where I need to go, not for questions about how to fill the form out, but actually about questions about how to apply the regulations to our specific process.
Hi. We do have your questions, and we are working on them. The ones that we're working on right now are the actually the ones from the 24th. So I would expect to get your responses to you very shortly.
Okay. I really have a concern about this non-isolated intermediate requirement, and I'm just wondering if there's anyone that I could talk to.
Right. What is the question about the non-isolated intermediate?
Well, it's not something that I can, you know, I need to describe our process to someone, and I need to understand how that applies to our specific process.
Okay. I'll take a look at, I'll go back and take a look at the question that you sent in, and I should be able to give you a call.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Susan Hipsky.
Hi. I actually have three questions. The first is just to confirm that when we've completed and submitted the Form U, we can print off a copy of that by using the PDF generation feature?
What you should do is download a copy of record. Both the PDF and XML that are submitted to the EPA constitute a copy of record.
Okay. Okay, and then the second question is, we have one of our facilities is an importer only. They do not have a manufacturing site in the U.S. They just have a sales office. So when we add that facility to the CDX registration, is it correct to say they'll have to add themselves as a new EPA ID facility?
I am not sure if you'll be able to find it in the FRS search, so I would recommend to enter some information, see if it's available. If not, if you don't find that particular site, then create a new facility.
And you're able to create a new facility within the application?
Yes. After you do the search, what will happen is you'll get some search results, and at the bottom, you'll have a button to create a new facility.
Okay. And then the third question is, we have several sites in the U.S. that will be submitting their CDR report. Is there a way for us to go into the CDX site to see listed all of our specific sites listed together? Would they be organized under our parent company identity?
Let me look at the slide real quick to see if that's one of the search options. Yeah, so it looks like, do the sites have the same name? Is there any information that they share that is the same?
They will all share the parent company Dun & Bradstreet number.
Yeah, from the way that current CDX registration works in searching FRS, if you can see the screen right now, in order to search FRS, you would have to enter in any of the information. You can enter in your EPA registry ID, facility name, address, city, state, zip, and then get facility details. So it sounds like you will have to search per each site. Unless they share one of the same information, then you could possibly pull up all the sites. But it sounds like for your sites, you'll have to search for each site individually, unless they have the same site name. I don't know if that's possible.
Right, because when we're in a corporate department, and when we go into the CDX site for our own registrations, which we do for PMNs, we're able to see some of our facilities showing on the main screen, but not all of them. So we're just wondering why they're not all showing up and if that's even required or if we should be concerned that some are not showing up, even though we know that they've completed the registration process.
Are they not showing up in – where are they not showing up?
In the main form once you access the main CDX.
So this is when you're reporting for TSCA for PMN?
We use it for PMNs, but when we go into our access, we see our other sites listed, some of the other sites. It don't at PMNs, but they've registered for the CDR. But our question is, we're not seeing all of the sites we know that are registered, and we're wondering if that's a concern.
Your PMN and CDR are separate applications that don't really talk to each other. So if you see one in PMN and you don't see it in CDR, and you need to have it in CDR, that's where you need to go and register that site in CDR. I think that's where you're seeing a discrepancy in your two pieces of information.
Were you able to hear the answer?
Right. I don't think I've clarified the question properly, but that's okay. I might call the help desk.
Okay. Well, if you look it up in the facility, find existing facility search interface, and you're unable to find it there, it's not of a concern. What you can do is then create a new facility, as Sue described, and it'll show as pending. So there is no concern if you're not able to find it with this interface.
Thank you.
You have a follow-up question from the line of Samantha Hauser.
Hi, one last question. Will we have validation errors for cases when our sales, we show more product sold than product manufactured or imported? This would be the case when we have an existing inventory of product from years past, therefore we're selling more than what was imported or manufactured.
Hi. The information that you're reporting is based on the production that you're reporting on. So if you are working off material that was manufactured in previous years, you do not need to include that in the information that you're reporting to us for your covering your 2011 production volume. To the extent that you're using your professional judgment and it's known to reasonably ascertainable, you may, that may feed into how you're reporting the information from 2011, but you would not report for a higher production volume than what you manufactured.
So are we supposed to, because we still made sales on these products in 2010 and 2011, we're supposed to keep track of which of those products were manufactured and imported prior to that reporting time frame and not report on those sales?
You should be using whatever system works for you to the extent that the information you're reporting to us is known to or reasonably ascertainable.
Okay. Just because I'm not sure, I mean, it's known to us, you know, what products we have sold. I don't think it's going to be known to us the amount of that product, the years that product was manufactured. If that is the case, will an error, a validation error, pop up when we try to submit that?
No, it won't. And as a matter of fact, often the processing and use and consumer and commercial use production volume may end up being more than 100% of the actual production volume. You may have, and then, you know, all of your manufactured material being processed in one step and then used in another step, so you end up reporting 200% of the processing and use for 200% of your production volume. So because of that, we are not able to set any kind of validation against the percentage of the production volume.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Laura Newcomb.
Hi, I have a question about the electronic signature agreements. When we created our accounts with CDX, we added programs other than CSPP, and we filled out an electronic signature agreement. So then when I went back to add CSPP, it gave me the option to sign with LexisNexis or to do the paper form. And when I selected the paper form, it didn't generate a paper form. Is that because you only need to fill out one ESA for CDX?
So it depends on what type of previous data flows that you've previously or data flows that you previously registered for. We use the term as reuse. That means that if you have an existing registration that you are registered for TSCA or TRI, that we would reuse your identity proofing and your ESA from those data flows, and then that way you could bypass the LexisNexis and the ESA. So it sounds like you're not registered for either TSCA or TRI, so you should be prompted for the LexisNexis and the ESA.
I am registered for TSCA, and I had signed an ESA and sent that in, and it says that my status under TSCA is active now. And so when I went in and added CSPP, it also says it's active and didn't create a printable form.
Yes, so that means that we're reusing your ESA for TSCA for your CSPP. You don't have to sign it. You can go in and access the application. You're good to go.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Jessica Robinson.
Hi, I'm currently the technical support and submitter for TSCA at our facility. And when I read the roles of the ECDR web user, technically I'm the primary authorizing official in regards to entering all the data. However, I'm not the senior official. And here at our facility and across the board at our other facilities, our senior official is not entering in any of this data. It's the technical support people. So my question is, can I put myself as a role as the primary authorized official for TRI? I mean, excuse me, for TSCA.
We've allowed multiple people for one site to be the authorized official, and that's because we did get feedback that the authorized official who would actually be signing the submission is not really interested in initiating the form and coordinating people to fill out the form. So it sounds like that's the role that you're playing, the initiating the form, putting information in, coordinating other people. And you should have whoever is going to be the person who would sign and certify and submit the form should also register with CDX so that person would be able to, when you're done with the form, to actually do the signature portion of it.
So can we have two then primary authorized officials?
Yes, you can.
Okay. That makes sense, because our plant manager does our certification for greenhouse gas, TRI, and then now TSCA then. Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Caroline Maselli.
Hi, I have a quick question. I'm not too sure if I don't have access because my authorizing official has not granted me access to it yet or not. But I can go into CDX, into the form section, and all of our facilities are listed there. But with the exception of one, none of them are started. And there isn't a hot link or anything like that just for the one facility. Is that because my name has not been linked to those as a primary supporter?
No, that most likely that means that your primary authorized official has not started that form and created a passphrase. So as a primary support or as a support user, you don't have access to actually create a form or create a passphrase for a form. So you'll need your authorized official to go in, select the form that they want to create, or select the form that they want to create or assign you to. They'll create a passphrase, and then they'll assign you to that actual form. So it sounds like your primary authorized official has to first go in and create a passphrase. They have to do that in order to kickstart the process for you.
All right. It sounds like that's where we're at right now then. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
You have a follow-up question from the line of Tim Gaffney.
Yes. Can you just refresh my memory as to where under either the user management tab or the forms tab, if we have 11 different facilities that will be reporting, and we just have one listed in there right now, which is the location that I'm at as the primary authorized official?
So first of all, you want to make sure that you add all of those facilities or sites that you're reporting for to your CDX registration. Have you already done that?
I don't believe so.
Okay. So that's what you need to do first. When you sign into CDX, in that middle of the screen on your MyCDX screen, you'll see a link that says Edit Current Account Profiles. You're going to want to click that link, and from there you're going to want to select your CSPP. And you'll see a link that says like list roles or manage facilities, and that's where you're going to add facilities to that. You can also refer to the user guide if you're in the application. You can download any of the user guides, and they'll tell you how to add facilities to that. If you're having any problems, you can always call the CDX help desk.
Okay, so it's under My CDX and under the current account profile tab.
Yep, you're going to click that, and then locate your CSPP data flow. And over to after that on their next screen, you'll see the list roles link.
Yep.
You're going to want to click that.
Okay.
And then you'll see your different roles that you have registered for your account. Hopefully it says primary authorized official.
Okay.
There. And then underneath that, you'll click manage facilities. And then that's where you add your facilities.
Okay,
so
thank you.
After you add your facilities to your CDX registration, just note that when you log in, the next time that you log into the application, towards the bottom of the screen on that form screen, there's going to be a refresh forms list button that you're going to want to click. So that will update your forms that you just registered for, that you added to your CDX registration, to your CDR application.
Okay, gotcha.
Your next question comes from the line of Diane Kiepercheck.
Good morning. Yes. Good afternoon. I have four questions, actually. The secondary authorized official, is that the only person who can create the form for the joint submission?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And is it possible to see, or could you demonstrate a copy of record? What does that look like so that we'd recognize it when the time comes? I can understand the PDF, which is just basically the same as the Form U, but what would the copy
of record? XML look like?
Yeah.
Do we have a sample XML? Okay, the schema is available, and it'll look very similar to that. Basically, if you're familiar with HTML coding, it looks a lot like that. It's just a lot of text encoded with all the information on the Form U itself.
And what is the key piece of data that we need from that form? Is there a confirmation number, a registration number? Is there some?
Don't need it much.
Those are for your records. I don't believe you need any of those confirmation IDs that you just described.
Okay. My next question is, is it, as I read the regulation and for the CDR report, for any data element that we identify or claim CBI in Part 3, for each data element we we claim CBI, we have to answer those two questions. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So you could have a total of many, many questions to answer in that case.
Correct.
And one more question I have is kind of when I go into my forms in the CDR, before every page I get a security warning. And it says, do you want to view only the web page content that was delivered securely? Now, I've asked our IT folks internally what I can do to adjust that, and they said I needed to contact you. Is that something?
No, that's a browser setting.
Okay.
Sounds to me like you're using Internet Explorer. It is my understanding that Firefox does not have those same issues, so if you have the capability to download Firefox and use that, you may want to consider it, especially since you're having so many of these security items come up.
It's before every page?
Yes.
Okay. So switch to Firefox, basically.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. And thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Crystal Brown.
Hi, this is Dennis Barbie. I'm with Crystal Brown. I had two very quick questions. One relates back to a previous question where, as I understood it, the question was, if there is stock of a substance and the export of that substance is going to be over the produced amount of that substance for the year, would it generate a validation error? And I got confused with that answer. So my understanding is that the form wants to know how much was exported in a year, and that's regardless of the amount produced. Is that correct?
So the form is looking for from the amount that you manufactured in 2011, how much of it you directly exported. So it would not be how much you exported that year of that chemical, but how much of the amount that you are reporting as manufactured or imported was directly exported.
Okay, that clarifies that question. All right, second question is, if you are the importer of record, you contact the supplier for composition information, they do not provide satisfactory information. What I've understood is that EPA will now accept substandard information, meaning they would accept the trade name of the product if you did not have the composition, or if you had it's a mixture and you've got the substance information but not the percentages, they would accept that without question.
Well, basically what you're supposed to do in that situation is you go ahead and provide the trade name of the substance or the way that you identify it of either the substance or the mixture, and you initiate a joint submission and ask your foreign supplier to complete the secondary portion of that submission. And they send directly to EPA the specific composition of the mixture and the chemical identities associated with that that we have the information that we need.
Right, I understand. But if they're not amenable to doing that, in the past we've always assured that we had this information up front. But if the supplier is not amenable to doing the secondary submission and you have no access to that data, is it now acceptable to EPA to provide what you have? And that will be okay.
You should provide the information that you have and initiate the process for the secondary submission and you do your best to have your foreign supplier provide the additional information.
Right.
If they don't, as long as you have made an effort to and set things up so that they would be able to provide us the information, that would be sufficient.
Okay, thank you very much.
And your next question comes from the line of Daniel Hedricks.
Yes, just for clarification, I just want to make sure that what I heard was, if I am a authorized preparer under TRIME, can I also be, and I have an ESA for that already prepared, can I be a support agent for the authorized representative, and that one ESA is sufficient, or do I need to have a separate ESA for this program?
So just to confirm, you're saying that you're an authorized official for TRIMEWeb, but then for CSPP, you'd just be a support?
I'm an authorized preparer.
Okay.
Not an agent. So I don't actually submit.
Okay. And then for CSPP, you're actually you would register as a primary support user?
Yes.
Yeah, so primary supports, they don't actually go through the identity proofing and the ESA process since they're not legally responsible or able to submit a CDR form U.
Okay.
So you wouldn't even go through that ESA process.
Okay. That answers my question. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Laura Prophet.
Hello. Yes, I have a question for you regarding the form use. I have a very elusive authorized official, and actually right now we're waiting for his written form to come back that he's been approved. Once I get that approval, or we get that approval and he gets signed up, I'm thinking that it's going to be best for, while I have him in the office, for him to set up form use for all of the sites that he represents. What happens if it's determined down the line that I don't need to submit anything for that facility because it hasn't reached the threshold limits? Is that a problem?
No, you can go in and actually delete that form.
Oh.
The site that has already populated into the form screen, you can delete it. And also just to note that the EPA, whatever information that you have, that you're working on within the application, the EPA won't be able to tell that, you know, let's say you have 10 sites that you're working on. They don't see those 10 sites until you actually submit that information.
Okay. Thank you. That's what I need to know. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Catherine Gleason.
Hi. I had another question on the HTML. Is there a place to download that form? I haven't been able to find it on the website.
I'm sorry, do you mean the XML schema?
Yes.
If you look under the CDR webpage, epa.gov/CDR, if you click on the resources section, which is on the left-hand side, there is an XML schema that you can download.
Okay, and is that actually a form that could be uploaded again, or is it just the instructions?
Keep in mind, an XML schema is basically a method for you to take a computer-generated report and import that into the system. It's not in lieu of, the paper form or anything like that. So if you're using XML, it's to leverage machine-to-machine communication. If you are attempting to fill out the form, you'll need to use the application for that. One key point for everybody listening, you can do the XML or the application. If you fill out the information in the application, you don't need to import XML. If you import XML and your XML is complete, you don't need to go back into the application other than to submit. I think we've had some questions in the past about people trying to fill out pieces of the application and then overwriting their submissions with XML, or people completing a submission and thinking they need to do XML. It's XML or application, and that's pretty much where you want to go with that one.
So if you have, this is something that your company might have already set up and wants to upload to you. It's not something the EPA provides.
For XML, the EPA would provide the schema. And we actually have Ryan Prasad here, who is our development manager for this. Could you give a brief rundown on how the XML schema works and what you want to do?
Sure. So the schema just basically provides a way of organizing the data that you would put into the form U, so that when you actually upload your XML file, you ensure that our application can ingest it properly. So the schema is just kind of a structure for the data to adhere to.
Okay. All right, thank you.
And at this time, there are no further questions. Actually, you do have a question that has come through from the line of Lamont Powell.
I kind of complicated question on imports and which sites are reporting. Far-known company that owns manufacturing sites in the U.S. They source chemicals. The chemicals are imported into the U.S. They will go to the different manufacturing sites, and they also are sold to customers. Who's reporting the import? The parent company? Do the sites report the portion that the raw material is used, and parent company reports the sales import separately?
Who is controlling the import? Like, who's initiating the import and controlling the import?
Parent company.
So that would be the parent company that would be reporting.
So the parent company reports the chemical is imported into the U.S., and then the manufacturing site would not report that raw material as an import at all. Is that correct?
That's correct. You would only report it one time upon import, and then the parent company would be responsible for reporting the processing and use information associated with that, which would include the any processing or use that occurred at the sites that it had the chemical shipped to.
Okay. And that parent company is required to have a U.S. address, though, for reporting, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. I think that clarifies it. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Karina Gilgay.
Yes, hello. I am filling in the Form U. And if you make a mistake and put in a chemical that you realize you do not need to report, how do you delete that out of there?
So over in your, if you're still in the same chemical report and you put a chemical in there by searching SRS, you can override that. Like if you know that you need to put in a different chemical than what is actually there, you can just search SRS again, and it will override that chemical. Or in the navigation tree within your form, per chemical report, you'll see a remove icon. It's a big X. We're just going to try and pull it up here on the screen. No, go to that last screen that you were just on. But in the actual chemical report, okay, stay on this one. So on the left-hand navigation tree, you'll see that you have your chemical, I think that says methane. And then under your chemical report, you see at the end of that, underneath the CBI substantiation, there's a remove link with a big X. That will remove that entire chemical report.
Oh, okay. I don't see it. Let me see. So you're in Section 2A, Chemical Identification, on Form U. So you would have to...
Do you have more than one chemical in your current Form U?
Not yet.
Okay. So, need to do is actually in your Section 2A, Chemical Identification, you just need to search SRS again and select the chemical that you wish to populate there. And it will override that current chemical that you have there. Now, if you have already more than one chemical reports already created within a single Form U, then that remove button will appear on the navigation tree to allow you to remove one of them.
Oh, I see. Okay. There's not more than one in there yet, so that's not on there yet.
Nope. So you just have to override it by searching again for a different chemical.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Sure.
And your next question comes from the line of Ravi Gandhi.
Yes, hi. This is a sort of a follow-up on the gentleman's question on imports. If I understood you correctly, if the corporate office is importing raw materials or chemicals, but they are going to different sites, it is not being used at the corporate office, but rather it's being used at the sites. So the corporate office would do the import reporting and probably state not used at sites. would the locations then be responsible? And that's a clarification I need to get. Would the locations then have to fill out the required information on the quantities if they exceed the threshold for each of their, you know, each of the sites? I mean,
under CDR, only the manufacturer of the chemical substance is required to report. So in the case of importing where a headquarters site controls the import and ships directly to other sites that, you know, are either owned or not owned by the company, the whole report is submitted by the headquarters site. Now, you certainly may have others from your sites help to collect the information needed for the processing and use portion of the form, but it would all be the only one form would be submitted, and it would be submitted by that headquarters site.
So then in this particular case, the number of workers and all that information, how does the headquarters fill that out?
Well, there's a variety of numbers of workers. In the manufacturing portion of the form, if the substance never comes to your site, then the number of workers would be the W-1, I think it's less than 10 workers, you know, basically the minimal amount. For the industrial processing and use, if you are shipping it to another site within your company and you're reporting for their processing and use of the chemical, then you would indicate the correct range of number of workers at that location. And then if you have commercial workers that ultimately receive the chemical and you're including that information on the reporting form as well, there is a third place to identify those workers as well. So it depends on the kind of workers you're talking about.
Okay, thank you.
And at this time, there are no further questions in queue.
Thanks, I was checking numbers.
Ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to ask a question, press star 1. And you do have more questions that have come into queue. The first from the line of Harun Ha.
Yes. I have one question. We make it's about the Section 3 processing and use information. We make a substance that we sell it to different customers, and all are using only for one purpose, and our MSDS also says that it's like solely, for example, it's for paint additive, and it's just for industrial. It's not to the consumer or people. We sell it to the plants, and all of them uses like for the processing for the same objective, for the same exact use. Now, can I say that the percent production for this one is 100% and add them all up and like present this as one line in the Section 3 for processing and use, industrial processing and use?
Yes, based on the information you've provided, you would have complete one line in the processing and use information for 100% of your production volume.
Yes, and the same applies. I know that after they do processing, it's goes eventually to the consumer. It goes to the consumer. Now, the same, it will be for the same purpose. It's for, like, paint example. Can we use again for one purpose, one line for the consumer and commercial, that in this case we only deal with commercial?
Yes, you don't need to report for each user individually. You would combine the information so that you would combine all of the information for the same consumer commercial use into one line on the form.
Okay. Okay. I have one more question, if you won't mind I ask.
Okay.
When we fill out the Form B, before we submit it, can we print it? Just is the, like, draft of print, I mean, not the final print. Draft of print, because I want to make sure that when I ask the vice president or the authorized official to click the submit, I'm not going to go through problem. Can I print a draft? How I can print a draft?
Yes, you can print a draft from the screen that you see right now. There's a little monitor-type icon that says preview. That'll generate a PDF for you for your purposes as you described. If you want a further point for your authorized official to have fewer potential problems, before you send it over to them to submit, you will want to validate that little check icon next to the preview.
Yeah, that I know. But before validate, I want to make sure that everything is correct.
Correct. You will use that preview icon.
Can you show it to me here?
This is, the preview icon is right there.
On the top or bottom?
On the bottom right-hand corner. It's the second icon from the right.
Okay. Let me see if I have one more question. No, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Alan Olson.
Hello. This might be a duplicate question, but let me run through the scenario. One of our sites manufactures a pure substance. It has one CAS number, and it sells it as such, and we'll call that chemical A. This site also mixes this pure substance with other chemicals and sells the mixtures. So I've got mixture 1, which is A plus B, mixture 2, which is A plus C, and so forth. So can I roll up all of the volume of A into one CAS number? Or do I have to report the volumes of A separately in each mixture that we sell?
The production volume for chemical A would be your total production volume, which would include any volume that you are selling separately as chemical A or in one of the other mixtures. You would also report that you were processing that chemical A into the mixture, and if there's no manufacturing when you know chemical change when you make the mixture, then selling the mixture is just you're selling chemical A, and so you just report how what happened in the processing and use section or the consumer commercial, depending on what the mixture is. You would just report the applicable information.
A is going into this and this and this.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Because I have one site where A goes into 1,000 mixtures. But then I'm just going to say A goes into this.
Right. And in those mixtures, A may be playing basically the same role, serving the same function. You're not necessarily reporting for each mixture independently. You aggregate the information so that you have, based on the unique processing and use information that you would report in that section of the form.
And also, if it has a trade name, does that change it at all?
No.
Okay. And let's just say all of this stuff somehow winds up in consumer items, so then it's got to go to the consumer item screen also.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And your next question comes from the line of Anne-Marie Savini.
Yes, I have a question. My company had imported a chemical in quantities greater than 25,000 pounds in 2010, but we did not import any of that chemical in 2011. And what would be the best way to report that? I've tried to report it just entering 2010 data, but it gave me an error, said I need to enter 2011.
Right. The reporting requirement is the determination of the need to report is based on your 2011 data.
Okay.
Production volume. So in the case of that chemical, you don't need to report it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Your next question comes from the line of Mary Musetti.
Mayor as well.
I think you answered my question with one of the prior ones where we were talking about mixtures. So if I import chemical A as a pure substance and then also import chemical A as part of a mixture, I count up the part that's in the mixture and then the part that is a pure substance for my total amount manufactured because they're both imported, right?
That's correct.
And then I go and process it on site, and it becomes part of mixtures. And so then I have to calculate each part of that mixture, chemical A, in each one of the mixtures to tell you how much I processed it on site. I don't actually remanufacture it. I just mix it with other stuff in the processing or in the amount that I use, right?
And that's correct also.
Okay. And then then when I go and I export it, which is, of course, a part of a mixture now, I have to tell you how much I exported of chemical A in that mixture to other countries, right?
So the only export information that gets provided is when you're directly exporting.
Oh, so if I process it on site and it becomes a mixture, then I don't have to report that export activity.
That's correct.
Oh, good. Okay. Thank you very much.
No problem.
All right. Bye.
Your next question comes from the line of Caroline Maselli.
My question is in regards to consumer and commercial use. We know what our industrial processing and uses are, and we have an idea on what some of our consumer and commercial uses are, but not all of them. If we knew information on two of them, but there might be the possibility of four or five, when we're looking at a percent production volume, those numbers would be off if we didn't put every option out there. Or is this one of those that would be covered under not reasonably obtainable type things?
Right. You would report the information that you know and that you've collected and the associated production volume with that, and then you would just put down NKRA for the rest, which indicates that there is additional information, but you're not it's not known to or reasonably ascertainable to you.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Brian McHenry.
Thank you.
Brian, your line is open. That question has been withdrawn. Your next question comes from the line of Betsy Duncan.
Yes. I have two questions. One is, we manufacture a chemical that is listed on the TSCA inventory, and then 100% of that chemical is exported. In that situation, is it exempt from Part 3 information?
You're directly exporting the chemical?
Yes.
Right. Then Part 3 is only required for domestic processing and use of the chemical, so you would not need to report anything there.
Okay. Thank you. And my second question, did I understand you right about the primary support, or maybe you didn't say, the primary support still has to go through the CDX registration process. Is that correct?
That's correct. They still need to register for CDX.
Okay.
However, they don't do the identity proofing and the ESA.
Okay. Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Brian McHenry.
In the main.
Yep, this time I'm going to try it with the mute off. I have a question. Under what conditions would re-imports not need to be provided so as to not double count volumes? I can think of a lot of scenarios where, you know, it would result in a double counting, and I'm just curious as to how you feel there would be certain situations and what they are where you wouldn't have to double count.
There are no provisions under CDR to subtract out the re-import of the chemical from the manufacturing data. So if you manufacture it, export it out of the country, and then bring it, re-import it back into the country, you report both the manufacturing and the import of that chemical substance.
So it's just going to be double counting then?
Right.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Your next question comes from the line of Kathy Bishop.
Hi, I have a question about the export scenario. If you produce a chemical and then you create a mixture from it, and then you export the mixture and don't know, of course, how it was used once it's been exported, how do you handle it for Part 3? I mean, do you call that export in terms of a volume or not? How would you then carve it out of Part 3?
Right. In the situation that you described, which is you're manufacturing the chemical and then you're processing it by mixing it with other chemicals.
Right. In my scenario, we're making an alloy. You make a metal and then you alloy it and then you sell the alloy outside the U.S.
Right. So that chemical would not be considered directly exported.
Right.
And you would not indicate that the production volume was directly exported. And you would indicate in the processing and use that you created a mixture from it.
Okay.
But you are only reporting on the domestic processing and use. So if after creating the mixture it's then exported, you would not provide any additional information.
So you wouldn't have consumer and commercial use?
No.
No. Okay. So create a mixture meaning that you processed it into a formulation, essentially, maybe?
Correct.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Linda Rogers.
One of the chemicals that we manufacture, we're generating this chemical, and in the process of manufacturing it, we're collecting dust. The dust has the same CAS number as the chemical that we're producing. But most of our customers don't want this material in that form. They want it in an agglomerate. So the difference is more sizing than it is chemical composition. So obviously we're manufacturing a certain quantity of this, and we also have dust. The majority of it is being landfilled on our own site, but a portion of it is being sold to customers. So I'm viewing that material as recycled, but I'm just wondering how I report that on the Form U. Do I create, do I fill out the data for the portion that we're purposely manufacturing and then also go through and fill out data for the portion that we're selling of the recycled material? Because there's a question in, I believe it's Section 2, that asks, is this material being recycled? And if I put the two volumes together and answer yes to that, the yes answer really only applies to maybe 1% of the total volume. So I'm just wondering how to handle that.
And it is the same chemical substance in both situations?
Yes, it would have the same CAS number. It's just unacceptable for sale to most of our customers because of a sizing issue.
Right. So you would combine the production volumes into one number that you would report, and you would indicate that it was a substance that was being recycled.
Even though only like 1% of the total volume is being recycled?
Yeah, there is no provisions to indicate what portion of the substance is being recycled.
Okay. Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
At this time, there are no further questions. Actually, you do have a question from the line of Ted Fisher.
Good afternoon. My question involves importing material for resale. Under the scenario where a company imports a material and the total volume meets the threshold, and that material is sold to multiple companies, is it necessary, in order to complete Section 3 accurately, to initiate joint submissions with each customer?
The joint submission would be with your supplier. So if when you import the chemical substance, you don't know the identity and they are not willing to provide the identity to you, that's the situation where you'd use a joint submission. You do not do joint submissions with your customers. Rather, what you would do is, to the extent that it's known to or reasonably ascertainable, you would report on the form that you were completing the processing and use information associated with that chemical. But there are no reporting requirements for your customers.
So if the material is sold to 10 different companies in different markets, the breakout of the reporting for that one chemical could have multiple applications. And so the correct or most accurate way to complete Section 3 is?
To the extent that you are able to do it based on the information that is known to or ascertainable to you. And you can report up to 10 distinct uses or processing and uses of the chemical substance.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Ardith Rossignol.
That's close enough. Thank you. I just want to clarify that I think I heard this, but if you already have CDX as a user and for instance, TRI, you do not have to repeat the electronic signature agreement or go through the LexisNexis process?
You shouldn't have to. It really depends on if you are already identity proofed and if you have an ESA on file for your TRI data flow that you've already registered for. If you are prompted to go through LexisNexis and sign in the ESA, then I would suggest either if you can just go through that and or calling the CDX help desk to help you through it. There may be something on the back end that's not allowing you to reuse your ESA for TRI.
Okay. And the primary authorized official, there can be two primary authorized officials?
You can have as many primary authorized officials as you want for a single company. You just need to make sure that when each of those authorized officials are registering, that they input the exact same organization name during the registration process.
But if they're already in CDX, then they just log into CDX and it will be there.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. Then what does the support do?
The support is there for if the authorized official, if they are a higher up in the company and they just, you know, all they care about is submitting that form, the support is there to actually enter the information into the form. We're kind of assuming that the support may have more information regarding the form U than an authorized official would. But if the authorized official does have that information, they are able to create that form, enter the information in for that form, and then submit it.
So can one person be both an authorized official and support?
You wouldn't need to. So if that primary authorized official had all the information to be completed for that form, all you'd need to do is register as a primary authorized official and you could go from beginning to end, creating a form and submitting it, and you wouldn't need to register as a support. Since you have, I guess you can think of it as a primary authorized official has all of the power within the application, and then your primary support just has the ability to input information into the form that's already created.
Right. Okay. So it takes the authorized official has to start the form.
Yes.
With some
that's correct.
Of the information. Okay. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Your next question comes from the line of Christopher Colford.
Thank you. Is a chemical that's imported into a foreign trade zone subject to the reporting, or only the quantity of that is entered for consumption in the United States, since an FTZ is considered outside customs territory?
I believe we have a frequently asked question on that topic. I would need to look it up. If you're not able to find that on our website, which is www.epa.gov/CDR, can you please send the question into ecdrweb@epa.gov?
Sure, I'll do that. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Haroon Ha.
Hi again. I have this question. We make the substance as a mixture. When we create it, we just put it in a base oil as a mixture, and then we export part of this. Then is it considered as export when I calculate for section part 3? Shall I subtract the export? Or I can't.
So when you manufacture the chemical substance, you're manufacturing it at the same time as you're creating a mixture?
At the same time that we make it, we like dilute it.
Okay. In that situation, that would be directly exported.
It will be considered as export?
It would be, right, so you would report the volume that you manufactured, and you would report that volume that you directly exported, and then report the processing and use information for the remaining volume.
Okay, it's export and the process and use is minus. I have one more question. Then, in case that it's not simultaneous creation or making the substance and diluting, if it goes another step, then it's not going to be export, right?
Right. I think.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd like that verified. If you can send the question to ecdrweb@epa.gov, and I can confirm that the response.
Okay.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from the line of Laura Newcomb.
Hi. I had a question about reporting our use information. If we sell our chemical to a customer and then the customer resells it, do we need to report the use information for our customer as well as our customer's customer?
Yes, you report as far down the line as is known to or reasonably ascertainable to you.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
And your next question comes from the line of Brandon Carrera.
Hello, yeah, the lady just kind of touched on that. Are downstream users required to report back to the company that they purchased the chemical from, as in how they use it?
No, there are no reporting requirements for your downstream customers. So your sales or marketing people might know how the customers are using it and what's happening. That might be a source of information within your company. But you are there's no requirement for you to either go and do a survey of your customers or for you to have your customers report back to you what they do with the material.
So if the customer considered it confidential, they could just say that and be done with it?
Right.
Okay. That's all I had. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Your next question comes from the line of Paul Bukima.
Yeah, I had a question about the site use versus, like, our imports are all done through our corporate purchasing, but then it goes to different sites to use. And so who generates the use data? Say it was like 25,000 pounds or larger. Is that a corporate function, or is that the site function, or...
Well, the site that's completing the report, which it sounds like in your case would be your headquarters site, is the one that collects the information. If you're within the same company, then that information, how the chemical is being used, would be expected to be known to or reasonably ascertainable for your company, and therefore should be reported by the importing site on the Form U.
Okay. And let's see. I think that was my question. I might have a follow-up later. Thanks.
And your next question comes from the line of Stacy Dumont.
Hello. I do apologize if my question is a bit redundant because I did join in a little bit late. As a distributor, I'm a little curious and concerned about Section 3 and how that portion of this form should be filled out. And just to confirm, what scenarios would be considered not applicable?
For some of the some chemicals are partially exempt from reporting, processing, and use information. So for those chemicals, you can check not applicable for the downstream processing and use. Likewise, you might have a chemical that is used only for industrial processing and use, and there's no consumer or commercial uses. So you would check the not applicable for the consumer and commercial portion of the report. Or you may be selling directly to consumers or commercial applications and have no industrial processing in use, so you would then check the not applicable for the industrial section in that case.
Okay. And do bear with me because I'm actually not seasoned in the chemical industry. As far as our business is concerned, we're simply importing the raw materials, so everything is 100% pure, and then we're then distributing them to companies that then use them for other uses. So in that sense, the industrial processing and use would be applicable to our business or no?
Based on what you said, it sounds like it would be,
mm-hmm.
And you would report the processing and use information to the extent that it's known to or reasonably ascertainable by you.
Okay.
Or by your company.
Okay. All right. Thanks very much.
At this time, there are no further questions.
Thank you, Holly, and thank you, everyone, for attending this webinar. All these questions have helped us quite a bit. So thank you, Susan Sharkey and the CGI staff, for facilitating this webinar. At this point, Holly, we can go ahead and close out.
Thank you for participating in today's conference call. You may now disconnect.